This is an example of speech.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Think, a free from oversight and free of charge, thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle blow hard evergreen topical heatwave of a conversation turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, music, literature, social media, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comments section in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. You can contact us at tmwpod@gmail.com. I'm Peter Elgro. You can contact me on Twitter at Bloated Nemesis, and I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at @green_weird, which is WYRD. This episode, we tell you what to think about the Wisconsin GOP power grab with our first-hand impressions. Prepare to get righteous and reactionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think. Place your wealth in the hands of a few. The third world's washing guns and drugs, financing the lives of the classless thugs. Fighting over against to sell cocaine is just incontrovertibly insane. Remigation of the old boys network. Decision signed with a shake and a smirk. Centralized states get turned a blind eye. Those who benefit never ask why. Just sit back and enjoy some cocoa beans.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the returning Tell Me What to Think podcast. I'm Peter Elbro. I have with me Charles Minnick. You can find us on Twitter at Bloated Nemesis and at @green_weird, WYRD. You can email the podcast at tmwttpod@gmail.com. And we have a little bit different format upon our return. We have been gone because of the election season, as, you know, experienced in the weeds, in the swamp, political operatives. You know, we've been busy. I'm just kidding. But anyway, Charles, how are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you, Pete?
Good. I don't know if there's any other housekeeping to take care of. Should be able to find this and future episodes in similar places. Google Play, though, is now Google Podcasts, so we'll figure that out soon. All right, so we were going to come back and have a discussion, kind of a look at the successes and failures of progressives after the midterm elections. We can do that at a future date because shit went off in Wisconsin over the past few days. Long and short of it, or the short of it, I guess, is the Wisconsin Republican Party in a lame duck special session, which apparently, as far as I understand, doesn't always happen when there's a lame duck session, unless there's just been
kind of unusual.
Yeah. I think one of the speakers, which we'll get to who I'm referring to and what I'm referring to, one of the speakers last night referred to it being like the fourth or fifth ever. You know, Wisconsin's been a state for 170 years, I believe.
Something going on that.
So they are pushing through a big package of bills. If you look up, if you probably just look up Wisconsin Republicans on Google right now, you will find a lot of information about what the bills are. Some of them, as of this report, go ahead.
I was going to say the reporting around these bills has been kind of not great, but not terrible, because I don't think any one media source has even gone into like the various bills that are, or the bills that are a part of this. Thankfully, they didn't pass the omnibus bill, but there are like dozens and dozens of terrible things about this bill.
And I have them in front of me. You can hear the paper. I got the last copy last night that they had. I kept going to this table and reading this big packet that is from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau.
How do they rate it?
It's funny. Subject, December 2018, Extraordinary Session Bills. Yeah, no shit. This looks at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them. There might have been more. There was another packet there. I don't know. It doesn't have a really nice, easy, like, summary or conclusion. And this does not seem to look at, even though this is from the Fiscal Bureau, it doesn't seem to have, that I can tell, and this is probably because the nature of this going so fast, it does not seem to have, like, conclusions on how much these things will cost. So I don't know if they just have a hand in, like, actually printing this stuff, and that's, oh, wait, here we go.
No, they should have graded it for how much it was going to cost.
Well, someone last night said that this hasn't been graded yet.
Oh, so it's going in that quickly.
That's like, amazing. Yeah, one of the speakers last night was, their point of their 2 minutes was that they're like, we urge the committee to not pass this legislation until the Legislative Fiscal Bureau has properly graded everything. Yeah, fiscal conservatives, right? So let me just, for those of you not in Wisconsin, or those of you not paying attention to the news, because, hey, blue wave, ignore politics. because of the... So, in Wisconsin, we're kind of used to this. Republicans are like, hey, let's try and push this stuff through really secretly and quickly. And you know, to your point about the good part of the journalism is that I heard about this because of, I'm following a number of Capitol reporters on Twitter, and they were all over this. I think it's because they have nothing else to talk about right now, that they caught wind of this, and they have been reporting the procedural aspects of it really heavily, and kind of like the top headlines of... some of these bills. I have not seen deep policy reporting on this, though, to your other point.
I'm not exactly sure, but something in the bill is going to hamstring taxes. And one thing I know that they're trying to do is that they're trying to reduce income taxes.
That's
to offset the increase of the online sales taxes that they're garnering, which is probably the most progressive thing I've heard in maybe in all of Walker's term.
So that is actually the front page of what I am holding. It's AB6070SB6075, if I'm reading those codes correctly. Summary of provisions, taxes. 1, individual income tax rate reduction based on sales tax from out-of-state retailers. This bill would make reductions in income tax rate. It talks about how it's related to a recent Supreme Court decision on additional sales tax. I believe that it would take place starting January 1st. This would be immediately for this coming year, it would affect.
So one of the messed up things about this is for Amazon sellers, right? And so even as we're, like, Oak Creek just handed a bunch of money to Amazon for another distribution center. We already have one in Kenosha. I'm sure there's one in Madison. Like, they're using our infrastructure, paying a sales tax, and then we're going to use that to offset income tax? That's not less wear on our infrastructure.
Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of even stupider, because part of the idea is that, like, and I don't know in the Supreme Court decision if any sort of, like, back taxes were owed by this. But at least it starts. It is now starting. And these, like, internet business sales tax that states can collect now. And, but it's, like, this is stuff that should have been paid anyway. And it's, like, oh, we're getting this little bit of money, so, like, our budget is so perfectly at the exact right amount that we can't use any more money for anything good in this state. It's kind of bonkers.
Is it locking in the personal income tax rate?
You're going to ask me too many questions.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
I haven't seen any reporting on it. Like,
the problem is that I'm not seeing... It seems like it's just tied to how much they're getting. But I don't understand how that would be...
applied.
Yeah. Like, I don't see a lot of numbers here that are, like,
saying... It couldn't be so much that anybody would get more than an infinitesimal tax break off of it, so why even do it?
Correct. It is. So the current estimate is $60 million next year.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I'm reading about who a sales tax applies to.
Man, $60 million could really buy a lot of schools. Or books.
Yeah. There's something else here. Number two is election of pass-through entities to be taxed at the entity level.
We might need our legal expert on this, but I have an inkling about what this is about. So this means that money that passes through those entities can... Yeah, okay, so only part of the overall gross revenue will be taxed, if I'm understanding.
Yeah, I think you might be right. It's talking about their rate of taxes on an individual income tax. Anyway, so back to... So
they're plugging in huge regressive giveaway and a huge regressive, like, just political move.
Well, yeah.
An infinitesimal political move.
Yeah, so this had to go before the Joint Finance Committee, which has members of both houses. It's about a 12-4 breakdown by party, 12 Republicans, 4. I might be off by one or two. I counted up, though, the Democrats last night.
So they can almost get anything they want.
Yeah, although apparently they weren't able to pass moving our presidential primary, which was widely seen as... So let me back up a bit. Our presidential primary as of now is going to be in 2020, the same day as a Supreme Court general election. We elect our Supreme Court people here, as many states do. And... there is currently the person who will be up for re-election was not elected. He was appointed because of a vacancy. And it is, I believe his name is Daniel Kelly, who defended the famous Act 10 in 2011-12 on behalf of Wisconsin Republicans. And I guess the state. I don't know. I don't know how that goes, because he was doing it privately, not in the AG's office. But anyway, that was a while ago. He's tied in with that friend of Walker's and all that. And he's a Federalist Society member, of course. And he will be up for election on the day that, you know... because if we have an incumbent Republican president, there will be mostly Democrats showing up to the polls because there will be a Democratic presidential primary. And so they assume that he will then not win. And so now they want to make the Supreme Court election a separate election, which, by the way, I do want to point out, not that this justifies what they're doing. They lost a Supreme Court election earlier this year or last year, that was a mostly standalone election. So there's no guarantee they'd win anyway if they did make it a separate election.
But just imagine, just look at all the time that they're wasting trying to get their little bit of advantage, and it's disgusting.
Yes, yeah, no, that's exactly it.
Election?
What was that?
Are there another election in the 2019 too?
I've been getting mixed. I cannot find in a... journalism or in a journalism thing in a news story anything about moving 2019 elections, but speakers were talking about that, so I don't know if that's just not even intentional misinformation, but just like accidental misunderstandings going on.
And so this just highlights the problem that I brought up.
Yeah, exactly. Nonetheless, the main reason, besides the obvious political power grab that is that people are against it, is it's widely viewed in this state by county clerks who run these elections that it's would be a logistical nightmare to have three elections that spring, because you would have the Supreme Court primary under the Republican plan. Well, so far rejected Republican plan, but I think it's still worth talking about because I think it symbolically represents what they're trying to do. But anyway, there would be Supreme Court primary, Supreme Court general, and then presidential primary that spring. It'd be three elections within a few months.
Oof.
And it's three statewide elections. And, yeah, the county clerks all around Wisconsin are like, no. I think it was brought up last night that there were 60, if I'm remembering, 60 who have spoken out against this plan and 12 that were not for the plan.
So it's a totally Wisconsin breakdown.
Yeah.
We actually have five basic opinions in this state.
They
very in favor, but not only slightly in favor, neutral, only slightly against, and very against.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the Wisconsin polite or whatever. So last night, Charles and I went down to the Capitol here in Madison. There were a number of speakers, which I think we'll talk about in a second. And then what's been going on inside yesterday, where there's kind of like a public, people can sign up to speak before the Joint Finance Committee. They get like 2 minutes. Something like this happened in 2011 with Act 10, which, even though that all happened and passed, I will point out that it was delayed and got attention at least, which is the main goal here of having, they probably had a few hundred people speak before this committee. They were there from like, the committee convened at 12:30. I think they were, did not have speakers for a couple hours, but I mean, there were probably 7-8 hours of people speaking yesterday into last night. And then the committee took a vote on they did not vote on all of these bills as an omnibus, so that was the original intention. So again, the delaying on the part of Democrats and protesters and just dissatisfied citizens did, I think, kind of work. I have a feeling the omnibus might have passed otherwise. But anyway, people get to get up there and speak. We were in the Capitol watching the live feed. Actually, we went and sat in the room later as well. That was kind of cool. Actually, it's really, I think you told me last night before I got there, you were like really impressed, or maybe you tweeted this or something, but you impressed at the, how did you put it, about the eloquence of the speakers, like the average citizen speaking.
Oh, yeah, they were incredibly articulate on policy positions.
Yeah, I think
everyone seemed to be pretty well informed about how this was screwing them over.
Mm-hmm. I think there was a national reporter that I saw on Twitter who kind of made a similar point. They were like, you know, it's pretty amazing that, like, person after person gets this. Like, they're not pulling a fast one over on us. They're trying to, but it's not really working. And the only reason they will succeed with some of this is because they have gerrymandered legislatures, which people were routinely bringing up to their face last night. It's kind of badass. I think that's badass.
Yeah, right.
What were some of the other parts of the bill before we get to the speakers last night, which I think will be a little bit more upbeat way to end?
Let's see. What are there, 8 different bills in this? Okay, there's some kind of environmental regulation change that we heard about last night briefly that I haven't seen any reporting on.
I don't know if we're going to be able to...
So, what they're... Like, the main gist of it is that they're trying to take away, like, power specifically from our incoming AG, Josh Call.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. Talk about
that. The Joint Finance Committee wants to take, basically, control of all of the lawsuits that are happening, and to the point where they're going to be able to hire private attorneys to continue this lawsuits Republican officials started during Walker's term.
Yeah, so this is, like, really gross. So there's a few... Go ahead, finish up.
Well, and the other part is that they're also basically going to be able to veto anything Josh Call wants to do, my understanding. Yeah.
At least when it comes to defending the laws, do you understand it as being across the board? They can veto anything?
Well, I mean, I was just kind of... I hadn't read the bill precisely, but...
Yeah, I don't know where it is.
I mean, I guess civil lawsuits are, of course, different than criminal, so I would understand that they have more... They might want more say over civil lawsuits, but... We elected Josh Call for a reason, guys.
Yeah, so let's talk about this a bit. So, one, these Republicans recently created an Office of Solicitor General. I believe it's because they had an activist conservative attorney general who liked to bring lawsuits against the federal government. It gets these Republican AGs off a little bit. And so they've created a Solicitor
General. And their supporters.
Yes. They create a Solicitor General and funders, donors. They create a Solicitor General position to litigate these matters in front of appeals courts, Supreme Court, all that. And they now, in this bill, and I believe it was one of the things passed last night by the committee, we'll see if it passes the State Senate. State Assembly, by the way, is a easy free check for all this stuff because they have a supermajority. So they can lose a number of votes and still pass. But anyway, so now they're getting rid of the Solicitor General position that they just created. And as you said, the Republican legislature will essentially take control of these matters, but because they don't trust the Attorney General, even if the Attorney General is forced to defend these things. Since they don't trust him to do that, they are putting in this bill the ability for them to use taxpayer money to defend these bills. And it was actually brought up really interestingly by, I think, Representative Taylor last night and some of the speakers that, so what does this mean? Like, who is their client then? These lawyers.
The Koch brothers?
Yeah, exactly. So,
Alec?
I mean, theoretically, so on the surface, the clients are like, what is that? Like, it's the state, right? It's just that the state doesn't trust it to go through the normal channels of the Attorney General's office, the DOJ, so they are hiring their own attorneys to defend laws of Wisconsin that they like, that the federal government is, you know, doesn't like.
Or even the state government doesn't like.
Oh, yeah, or the other way. Yeah, the state government doesn't like federal law. Yes, of course. And so they can hire their own lawyers. And so it was brought up, like, what about freedom of information requests? Are these, like, who are the, like, if we, the taxpayers, the citizens of Wisconsin, are the client, like we would be for attorney generals, like, there's already processes in place for obtaining material for the public to see about these things. And this would be kind of like, do the same rules apply to these people? Is it like a, it almost sounds like a, what's that where they call, like, the dark government or whatever, like the shadow government? Shadow president or whatever. It's kind of like a shadow AG going on here.
Deep state, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I think this was a...
It's kind of like a shadow government. Yeah. Like more... This is kind of like what they do in Britain, but the parties pay for their own outside political activism.
Oh, I didn't
know. I mean, just think about it. Like, in the UK, they have, like, entire shadow cabinets.
Yes.
Like, they have, like, a whole cabinet in waiting just for, you know, in case in 5 minutes the prime minister suddenly goes down and they need to step up, but...
Well, it's like Winston Churchill was like doing all this intelligence work while Neville Chamberlain was the prime minister.
Yeah,
he just had his own shadow intelligence agency. So Josh Call, the incoming Attorney General elect, he's pretty upset about this. And it's worth pointing out again for people not in Wisconsin too that. Arguably, I don't even know if it's arguable, the main issue in the Attorney General's race was legislation that Wisconsin is one of numerous plaintiffs in, sorry, litigation that numerous states are plaintiffs in, including Wisconsin, to essentially repeal all of the ACA because of like one little thing. I believe it's, see if I can say this clearly. I believe it's because the individual mandate was repealed by the Congress and the individual mandate is in the ACA, these people's argument is that that means the entire ACA is unconstitutional and should be thrown out.
Man, talk about swinging for offenses, swinging for the fences rhetorically. That doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't really. It's like, isn't that,
that's not how laws work, guys. I mean, you guys have been involved in laws too, right?
Yeah, because I think they're basing it on, like, they're sort of, the argument against them is like what they're basing it on too. It's like weird, because I think the idea is that Supreme Court gives deference to what the legislature intended. I mean, they still have to pay attention to the letter of the law, but like, well, what would they have wanted? Like, if we repealed this one thing, and like their argument is like, they wouldn't have done any of this law if they couldn't have had this one little bit. But obviously, like, the more reasonable assertion would be like, well, obviously they wanted to provide healthcare to a lot of people. So like
the spirit of the law says,
Almost like their logic is like the real point of the ACA was to have an individual mandate. Now that that's gone, all these other side things like providing healthcare to people should be thrown out.
Irrational.
It is. And so, go ahead.
How are you supposed to argue about that? I mean, that's, you know, one thing I've been agonizing over this past year, but now it's brought to a very specific point here in our own legislature. How do you argue with, like, just pure irrationality? I mean, I guess the logical thing is to, like, you know, try to establish walls around it and, or I guess, rhetorical guideposts, mm-hmm. establish definitions, but these people will change the meaning of what they say on the drop of a tat or the drop of a dime.
I think I might be going out. Well, I just want to get out the last thing I was going to say is, just to make it clear to everyone who's listening, that was the ACA thing is the main thing that was part of this attorney general's race, that, like, if you took that issue out of that race, like, who knows how it would have gone, but it did go to the Democrat, so, like, there should, in my view, be a deference to, like, the main platform. But as for what you're asking,
That's a whole other question. I'm sorry I brought it
no,
up.
No, this is a good question. Great question, actually, I'd say. Because I think, this is going to sound weird, I think the Republicans have been grappling with this. Of course, they're wrong, right? But they've been grappling with this for a while. Because they think, like, you and I are crazy for, say, being pro-choice. Like, they think that is irrationally crazy to the point where it can't be discussed with us. Like, there's no persuasion on that subject. It's a matter of faith. We don't have that faith. There's nothing to talk about. And I think you could probably throw a couple other issues in there as well. So my theory is they've been grappling with that for a while. And that's why, very pointedly in Wisconsin, the Republicans, but in other states as well, have been resorting to changing to legislating process and the rules and the system itself. Not, let's pass a law. I mean, they do this, of course, but it's usually, you know, from gerrymandering to Supreme Court election, you know, to whatever it is, they are trying to change the way the will of the people is represented, whose will is represented, how it's represented, what you're allowed to do and when, all of that. Like, I would just put it under a big balloon or a big umbrella balloon of process and procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why they've been doing that, because I think they concluded a while ago that they can't talk with us. And that's probably why kind of has slowly taken 15 years or however long, that it's like, we're all now like, man, they don't make any sense. It's like, it's because they're not trying to convince you and I. They're not trying to persuade you and I. And so that's why they don't make any sense. They have their own facts and rules, and like, they seem so crazy because they're not talking to us anymore, and they haven't for a while. And I think they think that about us. I would argue with them on that. Of course, we wouldn't get anywhere with that argument.
Which is the whole point.
Yeah, yeah. And so I don't have like a good... And so I guess my answer to your original question is, what do you do about a situation in which your political opposition seems to just have their own, like, even, like, form of rationality and logic, or lack thereof, and fact-based and all that? I think you have to resort to process and procedure. And I'm not saying we should rig things against them, but it should be representative and fair. And I think that's good enough to make their ideas the minority in political power, at least in a lot of the country and our state.
Mm. Yeah, and then, as you pointed out, that they're using state resources to advance their opinion.
Yeah. Yeah.
So even fewer books and less school maintenance.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... Yeah, the whole, like, using... I think this Assemblywoman Taylor brought up something about, like, are we going to give offices in the Capitol to private attorneys that are, like, entering into litigation that they don't have to tell us about?
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, I guess it wasn't in here anywhere that they don't...
I mean, if that question is posed to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, I don't think we're going to like the answer.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably true. Yeah, that's actually really messed up when you think about it, right?
Yeah, right. They've changed... Like, they've cornered the whole process and procedure. Like, you know, avenue of democracy. Yeah, there's no popular mobilization that's going to be possible. And even if we could fill this rotunda like we did in 2011, like everybody kept bringing up Act 10, like hoping to see that again. And I'm not optimistic, one, that it will happen, and two, that it'll matter.
Agreed. Agreed. Think it's worth kind of sticking a pin right here in that the reason they are really pointedly going after the governor's powers and the attorney general's is because those are the two state offices that they just lost that they have been enjoying across the board control.
Yeah. Speaking of enjoying, I thought of another point of this bill that I mentioned before on Twitter. Another reason I thought they might be specifically targeting the AG and the governor is the WEDC. Like, another part of this bill has takes away all gubernatorial oversight over the WEDC and allows the Joint Finance Committee to appoint all of the members.
Jesus. But, can you explain what the WEDC is?
So the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation is the brainchild of Scott Walker. They took the Department of Commerce and what was it, like the Economic Development Council or Corporation? There was already something that was kind of trying to do like a public-private quasi economic development incubation thing. But Scott Walker combined those departments because I guess the Department of Commerce was too independent for him. Yeah. It was too public, so there were, you know, records everywhere and pointed questions about who was getting, you know, money, who was getting the loans that the department was providing for economic development. So in Walker, since the WEDC came to fruition, it has been, to say the least, scandal-ridden. Because almost like, what, 52 or 53% of the loans that they've given out are... like, just weren't repaid, which is a absolutely terrible metric. Like, if that were the private sector, the corporation would have gone out of business a long time ago, or would have been shut down by regulators for being, like, a fraudulent pass-through.
Oh, and a number of the loans went to donors of Walker and, well, presumably Voss and all that, too, but at least Walker. Yeah.
So, you know, the investors were getting some return on their investment in putting those people into power. And so now that, you know, we're allowing some sunshine into the WEDC, they've got different people running it, and so what's the statute of limitations? 7 years? So most of the time the WEDC has been in existence, so if Josh Call and Tony Evers start cracking the books open to examine who got what money, then the people on the Joint Finance Committee, who are also on the WEDC's board, would have some very pointed questions to answer.
Yeah, there's a kind of imminent, I mean, potentially criminal, right?
Yeah, very criminal. Like, as I said, this looks like fraud because it resembles the key characteristics of fraud.
And Tony Evers brought this, I don't know if he used the F word, of course, but he's too nice for that. The only F word he knows is fudge. Tony Evers raised this. I don't know if Call did, but Evers raised this during the campaign. They talked about WEDC a lot.
Yeah, how bad it was.
And, you know, he wants to just return it back to the way it was. I assume you would need the legislature to do that. Mm-hmm. So that probably wouldn't happen, but at least he'd have oversight of it, right? Like, it's controlled by the governor.
Right, he appoints, like, 3 or 4 of the board members.
Which must terrify, like, the donor base and Republican base who are all tied into this.
They'll have to have environmental reviews for projects.
Yeah.
What do you mean this is going to be expected to be paid back?
Okay. This goes to, like, this fundamental thing that it kind of was brought up in sort of, like, kind of vindictive way last night, although I think the guy from Our Revolution's like, I don't mean it in a vindictive way. But it's kind of brought up, like, you know, if you guys do all this stuff, we're going to remember it. We're, you know, the Democrats, we're going to remember it. And, you know, I don't know, I guess use it against you guys in the future. More constitutional hardball, all of that. And regardless of whether or not, I don't even want to get into the discussion of whether that's a good idea or whatever in 4 years, 8 years, whatever. But it is interesting to me that the Republicans, and I think this WEDC is a shining example, are shockingly short-sighted with their big ideas. Like, if this was a plan to use government money, taxpayer money, to, you know, commit somewhere between just, like,
outright fraud and just, like, gray corruption.
Yeah, but, like, it was all contingent on the governor, like, having it be his little baby and he controls it.
Like, I mean, let's be real. Alec and the interests that they represent want to take us back to, like, a feudalistic era.
Yeah.
And that's what they thought they had in Scott Walker. But he couldn't get a third term.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, it's like they never even considered. I mean, apparently, yeah, they're doing all this legislation now, and, like, Robert, there have been, like, mixed signals from Wisconsin GOP leadership on, like, how long they've been talking about this. And Robin Voss is like, he's like, oh, I talked about this with the governor back in the spring, you know, but to be honest, not all of it. It's like, okay, so you guys just had an agreement, like, we're going to pull some shit if Scotty loses, right? Yeah, no, we'll pull some shit. Okay, we'll decide on November 6th what that is. But there, it's just like the smugness of not even considering that you might lose power and that all of your big plans are, you know, it's actually one thing that's been brought up as a critique of, like, Obama, although I don't think he was deluded as to thinking a Democrat would never win, or sorry, a Republican would never win the presidency, but how he was doing so many things through executive order instead of more binding.
But it wasn't even compared to Bush.
Actually, I think it was.
Really?
Huh. I think if the way I understand it, now I no constitutional historian on these things, but the way I understand it is like the executive orders were not widely used until Bush. He was like the Babe Ruth of these things. He so dramatically increased them over anyone else within such a short amount of time that like that meteoric rise was like unprecedented. And I believe, again, could be wrong, Obama did just as much or more, especially in his second term, because he couldn't.
I guess once the doors were open.
Yeah, he couldn't get legislation passed, and once 2010 hit. Kind of like the drone strikes, although that has a technological thing to it. But it's like, I think Obama did more, but it's like he was like the Hank Aaron of it, and I'm using baseball home run metaphors, where like the difference between Hank Aaron and Babe Ruth isn't that much, but it is more. Whereas Babe Ruth and then pre-Babe Ruth is just like a shocking increase out of nowhere. And I mean, and the downside of that is that all you need is really a president to come along and be like, ooh, new executive order, undoing that executive order. I know it's a little more complicated than that, but that's about what it is.
Yeah, executive orders, they've got a lot of, leeway in what they can do with it.
Yeah, and you know, by and it not having the Congress pass a law of that, you know, like the dream thing, the Dreamers, that was an executive order. It's being effed with now. Granted, you have a court holding it up right now, so that's still in limbo, but it's really unlikely Trump, at least unilaterally, would have been able to do anything to it if that had been an act passed by Congress.
Because it was an immigration regulation, he could have he gets to play with it.
So
he missed the way to run the country, as we're seeing now.
Yeah. And so anyway, just this whole idea of like not even considering 3 years down the line, much less, there was a speaker last night. She was like a 24-year-old recent graduate, kind of hippie-ish. She's the one who read from some book and began her thing saying, "We are unoccupied indigenous land," which is because the capital is on a Native American holy site. And anyway, she brought up the idea of like the seven generations. You should do things that are good for seven generations down the line, which I've heard before. And, you know, like they don't consider 7 years in the future.
Man, 7 months.
Yeah, yeah, no shit. Like, they had a session of Congress, of the Wisconsin legislature, this past year.
All right, they could have done any number of these things before. And, I mean, maybe not as easily passed, but...
I don't know. Well, no, I think it is. I guess it's debatable. I have a feeling they could have passed as much. Mm-hmm. It just wouldn't have been...
Like, let's speak to the incompetence of legislation on their part, planning legislation on their part. Like, they crammed all of this stuff. If they had done this piecemeal, I don't think anybody would have noticed.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, if this would have just been spread out over the past session. Although one of the speakers last night, I think it was one of the later ones, did bring up something like, because this woman was really like, she actually talked about a couple bills specifically, if I recall. And she brought up, she's like, you know, one of the bills in your omnibus is one that was rejected by this committee, or at least by the entire assembly, but I think it was the committee, this past session. Like, you guys didn't vote on this already, or didn't pass it. Like, why is this being brought up again right now? Like, that's kind of sounds super shady.
Huh. So maybe they couldn't pass it. That's kind of...
And that was just the one. I mean, I don't know about the rest, but so maybe it is just a this is another thing though. For them to not have foreseen this reaction of people jumping all over them for this, they really don't think highly of their political adversaries.
No, they don't. Well, as we said earlier in the episode, they live in their own little bubble and don't necessarily even want to understand what the other side is going to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, what, they don't think we read the papers, I guess? Oh, well, did you see the quote from Robin Voss? Where he's like, he tweeted, oh, God, he's such a jerk.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about.
He's like, people don't understand how government works, and then he has this condescending pie graph he taped out to it.
Robin, like, here's how much people, like, oh yeah, the percentage of people that can name one branch of Congress.
Oh God, son of a
gun.
Like,
dude, go fuck yourself. How about that? How about you don't defund education and then talk about how people don't understand fucking basic civics, asshole?
Yeah, right on. You know, and the audacity too, like, he's implying that his allies do and his opposition doesn't understand. Like, I just hate
ludicrous on its face.
Disingenuous. It's bullshit. That's like the official word for it. That is bullshit. He is saying one thing, meaning another, claiming it doesn't mean it. BS. All right, let's talk about some of the speakers, because I thought some of the speakers were pretty good. So there was about an hour long on the State Street side of the Wisconsin State Capitol, on the big steps there, where a number, like, I once saw Tom Morello play there on my way to work during the Act 10 protests. It was fun. And anyway, there were a number of speakers. Who stood out to you?
Sheila Stubbs. She's just a natural politician. She understood how to get a crowd riled up, how to structure her speech.
Yes, she did.
She kept dropping, like, very, very repeatable sentences in a very relatable way.
Yeah, the one I said to you that I turned to you and, like, that's a good line was, you know, she's, like, kind of addressing Robin Voss, sort of hypothetically addressing Robin Voss. She's like, if you wanted to be governor, you should have ran for governor. Which is great, because it really sums up, like, that this is a power grab away to take away from the governor and put it, and like, in general, I'd say, because they're sort of like personifying the entire thing within Robin Voss and a little bit Scott Fitzgerald. I mean, Scott Walker's name was hardly brought up, which I found surprising.
Well, he's already irrelevant.
Well, he's going to have to sign off on it, though.
Yeah, I suppose, but he will. He automatically will, because it's the only thing that's going to guarantee him a job once he leaves office.
Yeah. Chairman of ALEC or something. I think that used to be Vukmir. I think I saw that. She was like
Vukmir was in. Oh yeah.
She was like a leadership position of. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Sheila Stubbs was awesome. She had a lot of excitement. They had a number. So one thing I noticed about the speakers, predominantly female.
Mm-hmm. Which I thought was good.
I'd also point out, I didn't take a this is not a scientific polling. I believe most of the people I saw there yesterday in the Capitol and outside, well, at least in the Capitol, were female as well. Like in the room we were sitting in, there were like a couple dudes sitting next to us, one guy in the corner, and then like 6-7 older ladies.
Yeah. That's the bent that I noticed. It was mostly older people in the crowd.
Yeah.
And did you notice once they brought up that member of DSA that the crowd like immediately thinned? Like people were literally walking away from her speech.
I didn't notice that. No. I did notice that the crowd was like, there was a split in the crowd when she was like, now is not the time to be civil. I urge you to be uncivil. I mean,
Act 11, the Act 10 protests weren't exactly civil.
Yeah, that's kind of like, I think she was walking a line intentionally, and I don't know that she necessarily. I guess what I'm saying is, and I don't, like, I cheered. I was like, yeah! but I think she actually had a little bit of bullshit in there. In that, I think she was towing the line between, what do I mean by uncivil? Do I mean, let's all protest? Let's all, you know, gather round, raise our voices? Or do I mean something a little maybe violent? like, she didn't...
She didn't exactly renounce violence.
Exactly. So. And that's why I'm saying it's just a little bit, it's just a little bit of bullshit where she could, if someone went to her afterwards, like, hey, you know, why were you advocating? She's like, well, I didn't say that. But she, I think she intentionally was walking a line there that she didn't have to walk. At the same time, though, these are questions we're going to have to address in our state and in this country as minority rule entrenches itself.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be blunt. We have to be, like, maybe let's talk about, like, our views on violence and its role, like, openly. And maybe then it'll be either not happen because it won't need to happen, or it'll be, like, effective when it happens. I don't know.
Yeah, because it turns out protesting and otherwise deplatforming fascists and agitprop, like, little right-wing wing bats like Milo Yiannopoulos is actually effective.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have to say, well, we can't give them space. I mean, yeah, I mean, give them a chance to speak. But, you know, if they're just one person in a room of 701, then their voice is going to be heard in an appropriate volume.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm kind of surprised, actually, that they even had the DSA lady up there. I don't know. Not against,
I mean, it was indivisible, and our Wisconsin Revolution, the executive director was also one of the speakers. He was pretty good. I mean, some of the speakers weren't natural public speakers.
Oh, for sure. Yes.
And, okay, the one thing that's been bugging me since we were there last night is that I really hope that this doesn't become a way for certain people who are there trying to... Trying to have that rally and otherwise control the crowd. This isn't, you know, their vehicle for political promotion.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, those people fold, like, immediately once they get what they want, which we saw in Act 10.
Yeah. I'd agree with that concern. I think it's a stretch for that to work that way for them. There might be people trying to do it.
But, I mean, some people made their careers off of Act 10.
No, but I'm saying, but I'm talking about specifically what's going on right now as a launching pad. Just yeah. And the reason I say it is because it's like not as big of, so far, not as big of protests. We are far from an election. There's not going to be a recall. Well, could it lead to assembly recalls or something? Possibly.
This is the only political upheaval in the country, or at least the most pointed political upheaval in the country, which is why we had, like, New York Times reporters sitting in the gallery. Sure.
I guess what I'm saying is, like, it'll be forgotten in a few months. Hmm. Like, whether they pass stuff or don't, this is all going to kind of, like, be done
it's still
like, soon.
Bullet point on a resume.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, getting your face in front of people who give a shit, you know. I mean, it's not going to hurt you.
Admittedly, this is a little disingenuous as we say this over a podcast that we try to popularize.
And now for an ad from Casper Beds. No.
We guarantee you will sleep like a dream.
Any other... I'll admit I kind of got riled up with the lawyer from One Wisconsin who's just like this big old guy like me and his voice is just like booming, echoing around the square. I don't know. I kind of like that. That I cannot remember her name, but there was that woman with like the really like strong Wisconsin accent from, up north. She was actually really funny too. Mm-hmm. A few of them were just sort of like meh, a little boring.
I was kind of distracted by the people who were standing above the protest in, what was it, tuxedos? I mean, that guy looked like he was wearing a tuxedo.
Oh, yeah, you could see, like, people up in the windows of the Capitol. Yeah, that looked like, he looked younger, though. I'm guessing it's a page or something. Mm-hmm. God, all of those pages were, yeah, hey.
Well, I mean, they might not even be pages. They might be elected representatives.
Yeah, well.
I mean, pretty young ones there now.
Yeah, there's a strong young Republican contingent. Although, as I said to our friend Mike was with last night, as I said to him as we were sitting in the Joint Finance Committee room, I'm like, how come there's no Republicans at all speaking?
Mm.
Like, maybe that's the question we should end on. Why aren't they there voicing their support? They obviously exist. There's some out there, right?
Right, I'm sure all of those stations in the eastern part of the state are talking at length about this today. I mean, admittedly, yeah. Liberals never didn't give them any press bait or, video, but why aren't they supporting him? Why isn't there? There wasn't even a counter protest. Like, not even a couple of guys with MAGA hats and like signs, the greater again or lock her up or whatever the day of the day is.
My theory is that they are kind of like what we've been talking about with the like short-sightedness and the smugness on behalf of their, I feel like they're just, they assume they'll win. Like, it's all just like frosting on their cake. And it's like, if they get a little less frosting, so what? But like, they just, I don't know how to put it. They just assume that a politically entrenched conservative power base is going to do what they want them to do, and they don't need to get there and feel like they're part of a representative democracy, because honestly, they just don't really care about it in that way.
Yeah. I mean, they might not even know what's going on, either because they don't care about it, or they implicitly support it, or they just genuinely don't know, because,
I think I think not knowing is actually very likely.
So, you know, it's the same thing with the Democrats. Nobody knows exactly what's going on. So, we'll try to keep ahead of the story.
All right. Let's end it there. Oh, hey. Is this the woman? Wait, I'm just looking at my screen. Oh, this is her. Lisa Subek. I looked down at my screen and I have Twitter open and it said, follow this woman. I'm like, oh, that's the lady I was just talking about. Lisa Subek. She was cool. I liked her.
Yeah.
She was funny and I just... Bam. Now following her on Twitter, just like that. This has been Tell Me What to Think. We are back. We are kind of just doing this single issue focus here. We'll be back next week. Email us at tmwttpod@gmail.com if you want to tell us we were wrong about anything or suggest things for the future.
Or if you want to be a guest on the show.
Yes, definitely. I gave you the Twitter handles before. Check us out on Stitcher, iTunes, or whatever it is. Apple Podcast.
What's next week?
Let's not cement ourselves into anything too quick. But yeah, I think something to do with progressivism. A look at the state of progressivism. Politically speaking, not so much policy speaking, in the wake of the 2018 midterms, because I think there's a lot to say about that, both nationally and then as it was brought up by our legal expert Dave on Twitter, which is why it was going to be our topic, kind of relating it to Randy Bryce, who was at the stuff last night, Randy Bryce and his failure to replace Paul Ryan in Wisconsin's first. So, yeah, hopefully look forward to that, unless shit pops off in Wisconsin again. All right. This has been Tell Me What to Think. Thank you, everyone. Have a good week. Today's sunny. Today's the rain. Destroy the myth and we'll break our chains. Break your chains.